Welcome to Cabot Coverage, the podcast where three sisters and a beloved family friend discuss the crime-solving adventures of mystery novelist Jessica Fletcher on Murder, She Wrote. I'm Susanna.
I'm Megan.
I'm Glynis.
And I'm Ashley.
And this week we're discussing Murder to a Jazz Beat, which is episode 12 from season one and originally aired on the 3rd of February, 1985. And our writers for this episode are Paul Savage and David Abramowitz. And David Abramowitz only wrote one episode, which is this one. Paul Savage wrote seven. And the other one we've seen by him is Murder in the Afternoon, which is the one with Jessica Walter, where
it's
Gordon LaMonica's in it. It's like the only important factor that was Gordon LaMonica. Murder to a Jazz Beat finds Jessica in New Orleans. She is there to visit her friend, Jonathan Hawley, played by Clive Revel, who hosts a show. I think it's called Good Morning New Orleans. I wrote it down somewhere. I'll find it eventually. But as it turns out, she's a day early. Oopsies. And so he's going to take her around New Orleans.
He's supposed to be in a library opening right now.
It wasn't a library. It was a school library opening. Wasn't it something like that?
Like a college or a university.
Yeah.
And like, does that mean she flew to the wrong city? Is this back when you could just like hop on whatever plane you thought you were supposed to be on?
Yeah, you get on a plane, you go, take me to New Orleans, and they just drop you off forever. So he's going to show her around town while she's there a little bit early. He takes her to a cafe where she meets Eddie Walters, played by Stan Shaw, who works for band leader Ben Coleman, played by Glenn Turman. And there's a lot of sort of a rough vibe going on there because he's about to leave town for, I think it's Las Vegas, and he's not taking any of his bandmates with him. And he even kind of alludes to that he does not want to take his wife with him. His wife's called Callie Coleman. She's played by Olivia Cole. Eddie is quite upset by this. Also upset by this is Dr. Aaron Kramer, played by Cameron Mitchell, who is sort of their manager. But he says he's going to sort out the other band members and not to worry. And he's trying to play it sort of low key. Anyways, after that awkward encounter, Jessica can't wait to see Ben and his band perform at a bar later that night, which is really exciting. So Jonathan takes her to that performance. And at that performance, while Ben is performing, he drops dead. So then she is teamed up, well, sort of, with Detective Lieutenant Simeon Kershaw, played by Bradford Dillman. And he's kind of frosty to her, but they work on it together, sort of. And Jonathan is helping out in the background, and he seems like a lot of fun. And they, after a lot of stuff and a lot of investigation and the help of the wonderful cabbie Lafayette, played by Garrett Morris, they find out that Ben was trying to get rid of his wife by murdering her. By the way, Callie plays in the band too, because the reason he and Callie were together was that she had protected him from, he'd been involved in an armed robbery and she had been his alibi. So she'd lied for him. And he knew if he left her, there was a risk that she would out him to the cops, although it didn't seem like she would have done that, but you'd never know. So he had told Eddie while they were on tour in South America that he was planning on killing Callie. Eddie, who loves Callie, decided he would kill Ben to protect Callie by poisoning Ben with the same South American poison he was going to use to kill Callie. So kind of a sad one. And I couldn't find any fun facts for this one.
I found a fun fact, not about the episode, but something I just found. So I love Glenn Turman, and he was in the most recent season of Fargo, which I thought was uneven, but I thought he was amazing. And I just looked him up, and he was married at one point to Aretha Franklin.
Really?
Yeah, so he's the guy that plays Ben Coleman.
And he's got my same name.
Yeah. But I thought he was so good in the most recent season of Fargo. I thought he's been in like a ton of things. I've been down a real different world K-hole recently, and I forgot that he was on that as well.
That's unexpected to me.
I loved
a different world.
I thought Willie was comedy gold. I mean, Dwayne was too, but like Whitley was so good. Whitley Gilbert.
Where are you watching this? On what platform?
Let me check because I have too many streamings right now.
I'm going with like a Peacock or a Hulu.
I think it's Peacock, but I have to double check. I'll double check after that.
Okay. He was also really good in The Wire.
I need to watch The Wire.
Wait, did he play the husband of in Different World? Sorry, I totally sidetracked you. What did he play in Different World?
Is it Don Lewis? Don Lewis's husband. Yes. He's older. He was in the military. Anyhow, sorry. So anyhow, I love this actor, but it was funny when I was watching Fargo. I'm like, I know this guy. I know I've seen him in a bunch of stuff. And I was like, Ben Coleman. That's it.
Murder to Jasmine. I just want to also throw in here that we had a couple comments following our last episode around the Skinamarink comment from Ashley that there was such a show. You weren't having a fever dream. You're 100% right. So a couple of people really came to your defense there, Ashley. I was like,
I sometimes I mix stuff up in my head. Like when I open a cabinet, I sometimes think there's going to be a little man in there from the cartoon that happened. Okay, now you're all staring at me again.
Indian in the cupboard?
No.
Edit that out.
Cartoon. No, it's a little claymation guy who lives in the cupboard.
Oh my God, I kind of know what you're talking about. Wait a minute.
And he like has like a gravelly little voice. I know. Okay, so maybe one member of our listeners could also come to my defense for this. And it's just weekly, Ashley, is it a fever dream or is it reality?
When I was just with my niece, who's a year and a half and loves Coco Melon, and they have a video about Skinamarink, but they say Skidamarink, which I was like, no, that's
skin? Like your skin?
Skid. I thought it was skin, as in skid.
No, it's skid.
I'm wrong? I'm the bad guy?
Is it me? Am I the drama?
You're right.
Well, there's a lot of British versions. Well, who knows? The British version is probably the original one. But like instead of the Itsy Bitsy Spider, they call it the Incy Wincy Spider, except that the song is identical to the one we sing. They've changed those two words. You're like, huh. This is like, Ashley, your comment reminds me that listen to this podcast, and they've mentioned this a couple times, that every once in a while there's like culturally like a misremembered thing, but that we all misremember. And the thing they always cited as an example of this is that Sinbad the comedian was in a genie movie, and I have a recollection of this, that he is in one, that I can see the poster in my mind. That movie doesn't exist. He was never in a genie movie.
No.
We confuse it with something else. And then also Sinbad might have been in a movie like, what was it? Wasn't he like a bodyguard in a president movie or something?
Yeah,
like that?
And he played with the kid. It was the kid who was in Home Improvement, the older kid, right? From Home Improvement?
Yes. The one from Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, right?
Yeah.
I know.
And so we just like, that's something that doesn't
exist.
There's
like a mix between Sinbad and then Kazam, which is Shaquille O'Neal, and right. Somehow both of those, something happened where it like now you think that Sinbad played a genie.
Oh my God, there's a whole skit about it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I mean,
the cabinet guy, circling back to my first fever dream comment, is teeny little super guy. And it was an animated short, and it happened in Sesame Street. And the shorts feature a small little animated man that like lives in the cupboard.
What? It's so weird when something like that comes up where you're like, I remember this.
My search histories every time after we record one of these is bonkers. So I'm like seriously typing these things up. I'm like, no, this can't
you're
be
like true. Typing, was Sinbad in a genie movie? And everybody's like, no.
Like, well, that's not right.
Did he ever play a superhero?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. And then there's also the confusion because there was also the show called Sinbad about the biblical. Was Sinbad in the Bible?
I don't remember.
No, like that kind of era. Sword and sandals kind of era thing. Sorry, that might be misspeaking there. It might not be a biblical thing. Adventure kind of thing. That was also kind of in the 90s, 2000s. Anyways, Murder to a Jazz Beat. Let's do it.
Wow.
Like, what do we have when we go to New Orleans? Like, classic shots in New Orleans. We've got, you know, Bourbon Street. I'm sure we see that. I think we see a funeral procession that's always in.
But first of all, none of those outside shots were New Orleans. Like that, they propped up some Bourbon Street sign in like Santa Clarita and like called it a day. Because when Lafayette pulls up to the studio and they show what's behind him, I was like, that is not New Orleans. And then at the cemetery, at the funeral, there's a palm tree. Now, I've only been to New Orleans twice. But I don't really remember it looking that way.
Remember a ton of palm trees in New Orleans? That wasn't a classic.
I didn't. But I love to see like a shot of LA too. But a couple of my notes in here are like, this clearly isn't New Orleans. Wow, looks a lot like LA.
I'm surprised that wasn't on the trivia. Someone's always very quick to call out that they did not film a second of it on location, but
watch that I'm totally wrong and they're like every shot was in New Orleans.
That's, you know what's weird though is I just watched, I feel like I brought this up on here before, but I just watched Double Jeopardy the other
day,
like
love a couple movie.
Weeks ago. Okay, and okay. That last sequence where they're in New Orleans. Sort of like, I would say the set designer did a pretty good job here. Like, it felt it had, you know, with the little balconies.
I'm just being salty. But also the cemeteries in New Orleans, all the gravestones are really close together. Like here, they're all spread out on like a big lawn. And but also, it's funny that you mentioned that movie because I also love that movie. But I love the song St. James Infirmary, and they play that in that movie, and then they play this again here before they go to the cemetery. But
who originally wrote that song, Megan?
I don't know who originally wrote it, but the version I like is by Cab Calloway, who I absolutely love.
She loves Cab
Calloway. I always think of him as having written it, but I don't think that's true.
He might have.
No, I think I looked it up, and he.
You don't want to talk about it?
No.
But they always have to show like a graveyard and when you're in New Orleans, because even in Double Jeopardy, there's a whole sequence where she has to escape from a
She's been buried alive.
Yeah, the mausoleums are like, that's a big thing too down there, right? Aren't they like family? Yeah.
And if your ex-husband, or well, current husband that framed you for murder, like traps you in one, that is scary.
Yeah.
So that was a scary scene.
Although I think that guy's pretty cute. I mean, he's very naughty in that movie. And I love when she's in prison and it's like day two in the friendliest prison in the world where they're like, here's how you get away with it.
I know Roma Mafia and the other lady like take her under their wing. And you're like, in fairness, I think in the movie she's meant to have been there a little while before she befriends them. But in the end, that other lady is literally like timing her as she's doing laps around the she's like, you're going much, you know, you're going great. Like, I'm so proud of you. And it's like, I hope she stays friends with these women who have been so kind to her.
Yeah, they were like so supportive.
Well, and in the scene before she goes out of the prison, so this isn't a Double Jeopardy, but they bring her a cake in honor of her son's 8th birthday, which is so sweet. And it's like,
The nicest. That's how, okay, sorry, I'll get back to the show in a second, but that's like the French show that came out this past year. I'll just say it, Lupin. It's like Lupin. Oh, yeah. When he goes to prison, I was like, his cellmate has a coffee maker. Like all this fancy stuff. I was like, is that what prison in France is like?
So Murder, Two, and Jasmine, there's a lot of jazz in it.
There is a lot of jazz.
I actually really enjoyed when they were performing. I was like, this is kind of relaxing, like just watching them play the instrument or pretend to play instruments, I guess. I'm sure they're not really
playing, I was but. Laughing too, because when they're like, when Jonathan, who he was the bad dad in,
yes,
the one with Seth's brother, right?
Correct. So his only other Murder, She Wrote is in The Curse of the Danav with Richard Hazlett.
I really liked him in this one. I thought he was really fun.
Yeah, he reminded me a lot of Rhys Darby.
Yes.
He was great in this episode. He really was. He just seemed like a great friend to have, mm-hmm. to like pal around the town with. Like, and then, but then he also was ethical because he didn't. The fact that they were going to show a live murder on the news, that is insane. I was like, oh, when they were talking about that, I was like, you can't air that. You can't air somebody dying on the news. Like, that is nuts. And he's like, I'm standing up for like what I believe. And I was like, I cannot believe that station wouldn't be sued into oblivion for doing something like that. Like, well, that is so, like, bad. Yeah,
that guy can't wait. Who he was the bad judge in The Witch's Curse, but he like couldn't wait to get his hands on that tape. And you're like, no, that's so horrible. And then
So that actor is Ed Nelson, and the character is Carl Turnbull. And Ed Nelson's in 5 episodes of Murder, She Wrote. So Witch's Curse and this one are just too many. So far, he's played nothing but terrible monsters. So yeah. Although he was a murder victim in the other one, so that's a bit.
Right, like who can forget him flying out of that that window?
Oh, Megan, I'll never forget it. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. Just kidding. Shocking.
Jonathan says, okay, I'm going to take you to this place to watch the jazz show. And Jessica is wearing this huge like, wool like sweater. And again, I've only been to New Orleans twice, but if memory serves, it was so hot.
It's warmer there.
It's toasty.
Also, it's not exactly the outfit for like a kind of cool like music like private concert kind of thing. It's like I am gonna be like, if you just show up with like a blanket on. But she really enjoys it.
She had a great time. There's a shot of her tapping her foot.
That was so funny.
I thought that was really cute.
It's like, see, Jessica's not such a square.
she liked it.
She tapped her foot and she slapped her knee.
She also seemed like pretty unfazed when those guys showed up to confront Ben about ditching them.
Oh, she was not bothered at all. She was like, as long as my lunch is still coming, I don't really care. Like, you guys can fight about it. She's like, oh, what are they so bothered about? It's like, oh, they're getting left behind. She's like, well, that's a shame. moved right along.
Also, oh my gosh, Aaron was like so thirsty for her.
Oh yes, so I would like to talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
So I maybe miswrote this down. I thought on the IMDb page they list him as Dr. Aaron Kramer, but I might have miswritten that because I was like, I don't remember him being a doctor. But the other thing was, there was this weird moment where it's like, this guy has kind of been nothing but nice to her and like seems like maybe not a great manager, but not like a villain. But there's one scene where Lafayette doesn't want to leave her alone with him because they're like nervous about what he'll do. You remember this when they're and she seems quite wary of him as well. And you're like, oh, what has this person done that's like, I didn't quite follow that.
So I missed this the first time I watched it, but when I watched again, she's just come out from seeing the 3 people that have been kicked out of the band that are trying to find new work. And they talk about what a terrible manager he is, but they kind of make a reference to the fact that he's involved in other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe Lafayette knew that. Maybe he'd had intel from someone else that like,
the drugs.
Well, it wasn't drugs. It was, but it was like everything but.
Other things that you smuggle? Like, what is that?
It was artwork.
You know what? There is actually an episode of Will and Grace where Karen's trying to smuggle black pearls back into the country. But I sort of vaguely remember. So, but it's like, it's funny because, yeah, it's like as soon as you're smuggling, you're like, drugs. It's got to be drugs.
And he's like, not drugs. He gets all offended. But then it's like, oh, but it's tons of other stuff. Because they all say he's terrible as a manager.
But he's like giving them money from the smuggling operation. Right. So they're able to kind of stay afloat. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, because Lafayette says something about like, oh, I know all about you.
But Ben was an addict, right? So that there's like, because there was also, I don't know if he was, but everybody kept saying he was probably on drugs. So there was like this allusion to the fact that he was on something, but I don't think, I'm not sure if he was like, we never see him do that, or it could be that he was, but he's recovered, or, you know, I don't know. But a lot of them were like, oh, he was probably just like on something and it OD'd or something. You know, there was like sort of that kind of talk.
I just thought when he dies and she immediately knows that it's like this really obscure kind of poison, and then she knows what it is, and then Jonathan's like, and she's like, oh, it is from one of my books, and Jonathan's like, of course, Murder on the Amazon, like he knew
he's right away. He's a big fan. I like that. I wrote down stupid doctor. It's not a coronary.
I know that doctor. That part made me laugh because he also shows up out of nowhere. He's like, I'm a doctor. And then I thought Bradford Dillman came in a little too hot in this episode. You know, he's like the cop that comes in, he's just like screaming at everyone. And then I like, but I did laugh when he came, he says, where did you get your degree in pathology? And then she's like, I'm a writer. And he says, oh, I thought you were into forensic medicine. And she just keeps going.
But he like came off, he came in hot and then he kind of pumped the brakes. And then he came in hot, like almost immediately again. And then he pumped the brakes again. It was like, okay, like, because he was quite quick to like apologize and get them on board, but then immediately kind of like disregarded what she'd said. And then it was because she kept saying it wasn't the, I'm trying to remember what the instrument thing.
Was it the clarinet?
Yeah. I think she thought there wouldn't be anything. She thought the clarinet would be clean, but that was because I guess at that point, maybe she suspected that the person had already gotten rid of whatever it was that had, the reed that had been poisoned, that's a rough way to go.
I also loved when Jonathan gets fired and he shows up to the police station and he's so disheveled.
He's like hungover. Yeah. It's like big night. He's like, yes, it was. So I'm like, oh, okay.
And he just keeps going on and on about like how he was like going out so big. You're like, no, we get it. I think we should add a beat where it's like someone's really disheveled. We've had it a couple times.
Yeah, rolling around.
Yeah, Seth, most famously.
He kicked it off.
I forgot about that.
I mean, I would also say, like, even during the witch trial one, like, the guy who played the judge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just, like, his thing's all open.
It's, like, too many buttons undone. Like,
I mean, how else is he meant to show how sexy he is if he's not going to undo, like, four buttons? Yeah. Like, pull his collar out. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Personally loved the scene where they were looking at the footage and they kept rewinding it, and it was like, I get the text, like, but I was like, how are they gonna see anything? This is like so low res, like and also every time they rewind it, they're just like degrading the tape more and more.
I mean, it made me laugh, like, because wait, what's the movie?
Enhance.
No, what's the back and to the left, back and to the left. It's like, it's like from a JFK movie, I think. No, it is JFK.
The movie? Is it the movie JFK?
Yeah. Oliver Stone. Oh my God, it was killing me. I could not remember his name. And I was like, something. But yeah, there's a whole like extended where they're like going back through the foot. Anyhow. Yeah.
Sorry, Enhance is from Super Troopers.
But yes, you're right. Enhance. I mean that. Yeah, it's like, and yeah, now we have to watch this guy die like 10 times.
Yeah. And I see every time it's like, this is horrible. And then when Callie drinks out of the cup, for some reason I was like, I couldn't remember that it was coffee. I kept thinking it was like, you know, when people are doing like, what do you call it? Is it like dip? Like tobacco?
Oh, and they're like spitting out the tobacco. Yeah.
For some reason, for a split second, I thought it was that. I was like, oh no, please don't drink.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yuck.
Oh, I don't feel well just thinking about it.
Yeah, that's funny.
Sorry. Yes, that's horrible image to think. I don't know why it's sort of gotten that into my brain.
I also like when the cop is like, are you sure you want to say poison still? Because I'm, you know, if you do, I'm going to like throw the book at you if you're wrong or whatever. And then she's like, well, in chapter 18.
She's like, if you'd read one of my books, you would know.
Right.
Okay. Should we go through the beats?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it. Thunder weather, no. Secret drawers, closet hiding, no. Poisoning or bludgeoning, we had a very obscure poison from South America.
But Jessica knew what it was right away.
And that's like so dark that he was going to use it to kill his wife. That's like, yeah. And then the friend did it.
And why would he tell Eddie? Eddie clearly is in love with Callie. Like, this is very clear. And Eddie's the only one he's going to bring with him to Vegas of the group. But why would you tell Eddie? Like, that seemed like...
I think he was counting on the fact that he was more loyal to him than he was to Callie. But the thing is, all we've seen of Callie and Eddie is that she really looks after him. Yeah. So it's like, he obviously has a real attachment to her, that he is attached to Ben, but he doesn't like that Ben is mistreating this person that he cares about. And so it's like, because Ben's horrible to her and he's been cheating on her and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, it's sad.
No, it's a sad, I mean, it's a sad episode, but that just seemed like, I don't know. And then how easy is it to get this poison? I guess super easy.
I mean, if you're like involved in a really like large scale smuggling opera. I mean, I was like, how is this guy, how is Kramer so adept at like making that much money at smuggling and so bad at managing musicians? It's like, I'm sure both of them just require a certain level of organization. Like, I don't know. Felt like there might be some transferable skills there. I mean, okay, phone wire cut, no. She's shaking, no. Oh, but I was going to say, I thought Jonathan was awfully handsy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I also wrote down that he looked like Bilbo Baggins.
He did look like Bilbo Baggins.
That note surprised me. I was like, oh. And then I looked at him like on IMDb and I'm like, he does.
Yeah, he like checks out.
Yeah.
You're like, the greatest.
I love the Hobbit cartoon so much.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's the Bilbo that I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Not Ian.
To me, if someone like mentioned something from the Hobbit, that's what I first think of.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, for sure. I mean, because that's the like
good one.
Not the Goblin song?
Goblin. No, I mean, like, if someone says The Hobbit, the first thing I think of is, like, you know, the Bilbo from that.
Yeah.
You're right. If someone says the word goblin, sure.
Yeah, it's that, like, flash sequence of them all, like, poking their heads in out of the dark. Yes. I agree. Okay, window peep. We had the studio windows.
Okay.
Of the TV studio, sorry, I mean.
Yeah.
People were looking down.
There's a lot of looking in and out of cabs, but you're right, the studio one probably works better.
Well, it's tough. I mean, they're all sort of at the same level as each other. Obviously, there's like, yeah, Lafayette's cab, I guess they were sort of looking in and out. Fake name ID, Carol was Callie.
Right.
Because Callie sounded cooler, I guess. The fuzz slash cop quirk, we had Kershaw, and he was angry that he thought it was a publicity stunt, not listening. And then he was on side because he'd read her book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Bradford Dillman, but it was like a little much and no cop chemistry, in my opinion.
No, I don't think so. I mean, he liked that she was smart and he liked the book, but no, I don't think so.
Well, and she was busy fighting off Jonathan and Aaron, so she couldn't have had like a third person. It would have been too many.
I mean, Aaron was all over it. It was like, let me buy you a nightcap.
Also, Aaron, I think the entire episode wears his glasses dangling from a chain from behind his neck, which it was a choice.
But there's something about like eyeglasses chains that I feel are inherently cool. I don't know where I get that from, but I originally, when I wanted glasses before my vision actually went to garbage, I think a lot of that was because I wanted to wear a glasses chain so I could put them on, you know, so you can dangle them and then put them on when you need them. I didn't realize that when my vision started getting bad, I would have to have something on or in my eyes 24/7, and there would be no dangling of a chain because I could never not be able to wear something. But anyways, businessy business. We have the TV show, but we don't go into it that much. It's more about the jazz musician and the jazz scene in New Orleans gets touched upon a little bit. Okay, age ain't nothing but a number. Can I ask a quick question? Was the robbery 10 years ago? Is that what they kept saying? Or they had been together for 10, like it was about a decade ago, right?
I don't remember.
Okay. That's what I thought they'd said, but that might be wrong. Okay, so our ages here. I didn't get an age for absolutely everybody, but let's see. Ben was 38 and Callie was 43. Eddie was 33, Jonathan was 55, Carl, who's the producer, was 57, Lafayette was 48, Aaron Kramer was 67, Simeon Kershaw was 55, and then there was Yubi Sherman, who was 62. I can't remember who Yubi was.
He's the one that comes in to confront Ben. He's with, because he's like, you're getting rid of us.
Oh, that's right. Yubi's played by George Kirby.
And I think the guy that plays Jimmy, the guy that comes in with him, that guy was like a 60s crooner kind of guy.
His name is Bobby Sherman, and he was 42 in this episode. And our other guy is Heck Tattersall, who's played by David Whitfield, but there was no age listed for him.
Wait, how old is Jessica here?
So 85. She'd be
60.
60, yeah. 60.
Well, then Aaron, I mean, that could have been.
I mean, they were totally fine, age appropriate. And Bradford Dillman, really.
Yeah. He was just kind of annoying in this. So I just don't think Jessica would have, like, had any time for him, really.
He seemed like a pain. Yeah, he was quite, like, kind of fastidious in a, I don't know, annoying way. But I love that he read her book and then changed his tune. And it's like, just this is the power of Jessica's books, is that anybody that reads them is like, they're amazing literature. I mean, you know, I've changed my mind about this woman based solely on reading Murder on the Amazon or whatever. So, Okay, Jonathan Skill. Anybody think we have a Jonathan here?
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, no.
No.
Okay.
Just one hobbit.
Just a hobbit.
Just the one.
Well, and also, I've written a couple more beats since last episode we did, but I didn't write them down when we watched this episode. So one is a These Days beat, but we didn't have a long-standing crush in this episode. Nobody admitted that they had a crush on each other for a million years. Although I guess you meant to think maybe Eddie liked Callie.
Yeah, that seems like a long-standing,
Petite Feet was no, Glamour Shots, you betcha, Jonathan Holly's.
How could I miss that?
Yes.
New Orleans Today, his mug was all over the place.
And when Bradford Dillman's like, you, I know about him because he's seen that beautiful face all over the place.
We can't not have one. And it was big.
You're right. I already took pictures from this episode and I'm worried that I missed that. I'm going to have to go back and check.
Smooches was a no. Another new beat, which the name is a work in progress, so we can change it. But I want to call this segment the Bloody Hands because bloody is in gross, but also bloody is in a bit of a... bit of a British swear.
Oh, so it could go either. Okay.
But we didn't have anything super gross in this episode, so this doesn't apply. And it's an allusion, of course, to Murder and F Sharp with those bloody hands.
I mean, it's hard to... I don't know how we'll outgrowth that.
Those are the ultimate bloody hands.
Oh, so gross.
Like jelly.
I feel like I had just, like... push that down far enough.
Is I'd sort of forgotten what they looked like, and then when you sent through the pictures, Megan, I was like, oh, seeing it on a still image has really upset me.
It was gross.
It's horrible.
Super gross.
Familial Ties is a no. Eyes Closed Head Shake, yes, we did. She didn't close her eyes, but she did. You know, it's sad what's happening here. And in a way, he was like trying to kind of protect her, but anyways, fave outfit, worst outfit. Ashley.
I have for fave outfit, I think it's Jessica wore a suede jacket, white blouse, red necklace, and a patterned shirt. Love that. I don't think I had a worst outfit.
Okay.
No, I have a lot of her outfits, but written down. I think almost every outfit she wore is written down, but I won't take them away from others.
Okay. Megan, what about you?
I really liked Callie's funeral outfit with the red hat and Jessica's polka dot top and bottom. Was that the one you were talking about, Ashley?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then and I loved Lafayette's Saints hat. Agreed. I didn't have a worst outfit.
Okay.
When we get to Stage Struck, I got a lot to say.
Glynis, what about you?
Yeah, my favorites were the Jessica's brown coat, when the polka dot shirt. And then Callie's red and white dress. I did not care for Jessica's brown silk dress that she wore during the performance. It was not a good color on her.
Okay. I think this is kind of impressive considering this is season one, but I also didn't have a worst outfit. So there are sometimes on the earlier seasons, it can be kind of rough going. Fave outfit, I liked JB's opening outfit, which was the cream blouse with the brown coat. I thought that looked very sharp. Okay, Megan, biggest hunk.
I think Ben Coleman is a hunk. I know he's not a nice guy. And I actually thought that Aaron was not bad looking either. Mm-hmm. So those two.
Glynis, what about you?
Yeah, same. Glynterman.
Ashley?
Yeah, same. Ben Coleman, Glenn Turman.
I put down Callie.
Callie was really pretty.
That's what I was. Yeah. I was waffling between Ben and Callie, and I, you know, went with Ben.
Yeah, he was really cute. I mean, yeah. J.B. Burns, Glynnis.
I don't know if I had anyone specific. Well, she did say that she found that man so insufferable. I had to say something. I think it was to the like owner.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what she said, but she was just like, "I will not be doing that." And then when the cop said, "I know a publicity stunt when I see one."
Mm-hmm.
And when she's talking to her friend, what's his name? Is it Aaron? No,
Jonathan.
And she says, "I'm glad the city hasn't taken away your gift for hyperbole."
Hey, yeah, that was good.
Ashley, what about you?
I don't have any Burns. All I have written down is another book that she wrote, which was Murder on the Amazon. But
I love that we're keeping track of this.
Yeah, I was like, that's important, and I start it. So, and then she knows a lot of random British people, but no Burns.
Megan, what about you?
The more like kind of mean things that Ben said when they're talking about moving to Vegas. Aaron says, "Oh, they wanted a new look." Ben's like, "Something a little fresher, not so worn out," which is rough. And then he says, "What little guts you got are bobbing behind your belt buckle," which is tough. Those are not like nice things to say. Yeah, no. And I just commented on the number of times like Aaron said something to her that was like flirting with her.
I only wrote down two. There were a couple other lines I wrote down, but they're not really applicable to this. One was the line that just preceded what Glynnis had said, where she says, "Good day, Mr. Turnbull." Like when he's trying to follow up on something and she just says, "Good day," and walks out. It's like, oh, that's pretty good. And then the other one was when she said, "That may sound like a motive." So it's just also very, like, both Jessica thought that was very good. Okay. Fave guest star, Ashley, what do you think?
I would say Glenn Turman. I know it wasn't that much, but yeah.
Okay. Megan, what about you?
Yeah, he was good. I mean, he was good. Callie was good. I thought Jonathan was fun. And I liked Garrett Morris. So I guess, I mean, there are a few of them.
Everyone?
No. Oh, yeah, I do like Garrett Morris. And I do like Bradford Dillman. Yeah.
Yeah. Glynnis, what about you?
I'm going to go Garrett Morris. I thought he was really funny.
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to go Garrett Morris. I thought it was I'd written down like three different people. Now I've crossed them all out. Glynnis's guess. Glynnis, I wrote down that you guessed Carl Turnbull, who was the producer.
Oh, yeah. I honestly.
I mean, in fairness to Glynnis.
Part of the reason why I have not said much on this episode, I watched it twice. Both times I fell asleep. And, you know, maybe it was jet lag. Maybe, I don't know. But
so, maybe it was Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline. And so I do feel quite bad for this episode, because I don't think I gave it a fair shot. But also, I mean, you know, it couldn't keep me awake. So that's on the episode.
We did watch it quite late. And before we started, you were like, "I am really tired." Like, oh, no. Well, following on from that, that nugget of insight into how this viewing experience was for Glynnis, what do we think she gave Murder to a Jazz Beat? I'm going to say like a 3. Only because I think because she didn't finish it, really. Even though she did try to watch it multiple times.
I would say a 2.
I say 5.
What do you think, Glynnis? What did you put?
I put a 2.
2, okay. Oof. In fairness to Glynis, that's just for the first 75% of the episode. And even then, I think it was touch and go.
It's an incomplete.
Yeah, it is. It is an incomplete. It's not really.
Yeah, it's okay, fine. We'll bump it up to 3. I just...
No, you don't have to.
I thought the episode was kind of all over the place. Like, you've got this band that is falling apart. You've got... terrible person who's the head of the band who's trying to kill his wife because of something that happened 10 years ago, and then they're also smuggling stuff in from South America, and Eddie used a really unique poison on the reed, and maybe it was the coffee, but was it the reed? And then he's trying to put the clarinet in with the guy, Ben.
You mean Miss Emma that was given to him by sweet man Buddy Bronson?
Yeah, and then it was just a lot going on. And then also, like, not I liked the music reports, but that also felt like it went on for like 20 minutes.
Go on for a long time. It did.
An episode that's only 40 minutes and they've crammed in like 20 subplots and storylines.
I think it's the thing is, all of this is correct. And also, like, you were jet lagged and all of that as well. But this is why sometimes, like, when you're watching the episode, provided you're able to like pay attention to it all, it's like, there are a lot of storylines. And this is why sometimes when I'm recapping the episodes, I don't appreciate how convoluted I'm making it sound in trying to verbally describe what's happened. Because as you're watching it, it kind of all falls into place. But I know what you're saying. Like, this one, there's a lot. And when they start talking about the South Africa stuff, South America, it's like, you're then like, oh, am I meant to be keeping track of that? Because that is, they keep mentioning it. And it's like,
and then why is the manager a doctor? Like, there was just so many things that felt like,
why is the manager a doctor?
But in fairness, like, IMDb does sometimes put some stuff on there that is not correct. So we found out sometimes they don't go back and double check.
That is true.
Yeah. So I just, you know.
So Glynis gave this a 2. Well, and I just want, you gotta say 3. I just want to say, like, people came for me giving Murder and F Sharp a 2.
Yeah, people that didn't know you. And then when mom heard you gave it a 2, she was like, man, Susanna better be careful. Like,
should I hire some security detail?
No, I think she just meant, like, we didn't want to alienate any of our listeners who maybe really liked that episode.
Well, I don't think that this is going to be that surprising from me, because I don't give that high of scores.
Well, this is what I was going to say, because Glynis keeps her scoring low. I'm like handing out 9s and 10s. No, you're right.
You giving that episode a 2 was really shocking. Like, that was...
That it did surprise me. What was the episode that I hated?
The one, the horse racing one.
Dead Heat.
Yeah. I'd like to go back and rescore that as a minus 1.
Glynis. I don't think that episode's that bad.
Like, I mean, I'm sure, like, this is the funny thing about those early episodes we recorded. It's like, I'm sure if we went back and rewatched them, we'd be like, wait a minute, maybe we sort of skewed this a little bit. But
when we do our 10-year reunion special, we can
look back the retrospective.
Do we still feel comfortable with the scores we gave Murder and F Sharp? So Glynis gave this one a 3. Ashley. Oh, sorry. Favorite moment, Glynis. Sorry, I always forget to ask you that.
Oh, anything with the cab driver. I thought he was fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Fun. Ashley, what about you?
Oof. So I really liked the jazz music and I liked the location, but I do think it was kind of just dark and a little bit more convoluted. Mm-hmm. Then I do like, so I'm going to go, I think a 7.
Okay.
But mostly the higher score also for the music. Like, if they hadn't had the music and it was just this, I might have been lower. But then they helped bump it up. And Garrett Morris. So.
Yep. Okay. Megan, what about you?
Yeah, I'll go 7 also. Just, it is sad. And, like, a lot of my notes are like, Callie, you can do better. Like, don't. You yeah. don't stay with this guy who you now know wants to kill you.
I know, and he told her. He was like, I told her, but she didn't believe me. He's like, oh, no.
Yeah, like, you're like, come on. Like, he's not, I mean, he's really handsome, so I get it, and, like, talented, and, you know, but it was kind of rough.
Yeah.
I give it a 7. Okay, favorite moment. I mean, I think it is when Jonathan shows up super hungover at the station.
Yeah.
I did like the whole scene. I did like the jazz show scene where they're showing everyone. But Jonathan, I have a couple of pictures. There's one where he just has his like head in his hands because he's just so like, you know, doesn't feel good.
I'm gonna give this one, I think this is kind of predictable for me because I don't think this episode is bad or anything, but I do think it's more serious, and those just tend to be the ones I don't really like as much. But I like the music component a lot, actually, and I think it's actually kind of nice, like what you're saying, that we actually get to listen to it a little bit and it's not just us being told all this, you know what I mean. So I'd give this one a 6. It's just interesting to me, like some of these episodes I've seen a billion times, and then there'll be like this one where it's like, I have seen it before a couple of times, but it's not one I like seek out to rewatch. And so I think it's because it's sad. Honestly, I think because you get to the end and I'm like, God, that was really sad. And my favorite moment is probably when she's schooling the producer to get Jonathan his show back.
That was good.
It's like, you want Jessica on your side if you need to bully somebody into doing something.
Oh, yeah.
Does anybody have anything else they want to add before we close out on this one?
Why is this death so sad is what I wrote. Oh. Another note I had.
Sweet man, Buddy Bronson. I don't know why I would do it.
Where was Donald Ross for this episode? Like, why wasn't he involved?
Oh,
he
loves jazz, that would have been the perfect one for him.
Yeah. I guess you hadn't been hired yet.
Probably not. He probably watched this one. It's like, they don't know anybody in jazz.
He's like, he's like throwing his wand at the TV. Or did they have wands in the 80s? He walked up and threw the TV itself.
Yeah.
Like, sweet man, Buddy Bronson. Anyhow, okay, sorry. No, that's it.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening, and we hope you'll listen again next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bless you.
I didn't get him muted in time.